righty, hour number two of our radio program. That's right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We welcome in Josh Pate. We all know how great his podcast is. His great job covering college football for CBS Sports, and he's kind enough to join us right now. Josh, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this, and how are you?
I'm good, man. I need more foliage in my background like you have. This is just lifeless here.
Yeah. Well, at least you talk about college football, and then you bring life to the people and very entertaining things to the people when discussing college football. By the way, talking about entertaining scenes, it was not lifeless in Lincoln, Nebraska on Saturday night. Now, I say this knowing Matt Rhule from when he was at Temple. I am like the biggest Matt Rhule fan in the national media, so I know what he's capable of at tougher spots to rebuild with Temple and Baylor. Now he has Dylan Raiola at Nebraska. That was very impressive on Saturday, but big picture, how far are you willing to go for this season with the Nebraska Cornhuskers?
I'm going irresponsibly far. I mean, you could talk me into double-digit wins. You could talk me into that because even before the season, I mean, you go back to the history, the recent history, even with Frost of Nebraska. It's just been a bunch of one-possession losses. So it's always been the kind of program where you feel like degrees of course correction could make a big difference in the win-loss record. But you're right. When Matt came in there, he came in there and he brought Jeff Sims in from Georgia Tech, who's a guy who's always had a little bit of promise. It's like DJU. He had that one big game against Notre Dame, and that sort of set the expectation for his entire career, never lived back up to that. Jeff Sims had a couple of big games in his debut at Georgia Tech, never lived back up to that, was a liability at Nebraska. So year two, you've got, of course, the reinforcement, the Matt Rhule year two effect. It coincides with bringing in true freshman quarterback and Dylan Raiola. They've got the most underrated defensive staff in the country, I still believe, at Nebraska. People still don't talk about him enough. So everyone circled that road game at Ohio State with good reason. I think most people assume that'll be a loss. If it is, okay. You find me the guaranteed loss the rest of the way, and you'll stop your search pretty quickly because it's not there. So they should be competitive, perhaps even favored in most every other game they play this year. And unlike last few years, the profile of this program does not seem to be one that's ready to give away one possession games. They may be on the right side of those now.
Let me get to the other side for Coach Prime in Colorado. Concepts of a plan have been in the news ever since last night's presidential debate. When we get into the concepts of a plan for Coach Prime at Colorado, what is it? Because I'm seeing a team that is built off of Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders, and then it's crazy how far, as great as the players are, the drop-off is from everybody else pretty much on that roster.
So I've hesitated in calling what Deion is doing at Colorado building a program, because I don't think that this is a program. I view it as an experiment. And so, you know, they faced a guy building a program last week, and they lost to him, which is not the end-all be-all, but I've always wondered when they're going into the Big 12 – the common sort of casual 50,000-foot view was, wow, Travis Hunter, Shedeur against inferior Big 12 athletes, watch out. That is not the way to look at this. It's never been the way to look at this. Actually, what you're walking into is a minefield every week, because what you're facing is, absolutely, a bunch of programs that aren't littered with future first-round talent. But they've known that about themselves for a long time. They've never relied on it. What they've relied on is third, fourth, and fifth-year players who are huge culture fits. It's all about culture in the Big 12. They're like little bowling balls, and they will shake your tree every week. And if you're not one, if you're not a program, if you're just a bunch of individual pieces thrown into a pot, they'll expose you. And so what Nebraska did to Colorado last week, even though it wasn't a conference game, could be a preview of things to come in Big 12 play, because Utah, Kansas State, TCU, like those kind of programs, they may not show up first round of NFL draft night. They will absolutely shake your tree. And if you're not put together, there's pieces falling all over the place.
With Shedeur off to the NFL after this season, the same for Travis Hunter, right? With the expectation being that, and they're both going to be first round picks. How likely do you think it is that Coach Prime's going to be back at Colorado and he's going to want to remain as the head coach is the way to ask it?
I don't see it happening. There's no guided knowledge of that. It's not like Deion has told me that or anything, but I look at the approach that's been taken there. If I were going to Colorado and I were planning on staying there for a long time, I'd be recruiting high school football players, and they're not. Now, you can tell me, well, we needed to win right away. Well, okay, but still, you do two things. You can serve multiple purposes, or purpi, the plural of purpose. You can start recruiting high school. There's been no effort to do that there. And so that reeks of a short-term stay. You know, like you said, Shedeur and Travis Hunter are off, and that reeks of short-term stay. So there's another school of thought, and I can tell you this. Now, if you want to get deep into the conspiratorial sort of coaching carousel rumors, which are already cranking this time of year, there's a school of thought that says Sam Pittman's out at Arkansas. There's a school of thought that thinks Gus Malzahn would be their first call at UCF. There's a school of thought that UCF would be the perfect landing spot for a Deion Sanders if he wanted to leave Colorado but not get out of coaching. And there are a lot of people behind the scenes who endorse that. It never plays out the way it sounds in September, but I don't know if there, to me, there's two questions. Is he at Colorado next year, and is he coaching anywhere next year? And those don't necessarily have to be the same answer.
Josh Pate here with us. Always does a great job covering college football. His podcast is tremendous. You could always hear him also on CBS Sports as well, covering the sport. Alabama and Wisconsin. How much of a difficult task will Wisconsin be for Alabama this Saturday at noon Eastern?
It's good to go on the road for the first time. You know, you got a new staff going on the road for the first time. A bunch of young guys playing for Alabama, so there's that. Matchup-wise, Alabama should handle them. Wisconsin should not be able to stop their run. If they do, it'll be heavy boxes they do it with. Bama led the country last year in explosive play rate over the top. Now, they don't have an intermediate passing game, but that's not what they'll need to win this game. And conversely, if Wisconsin were to be there, like if you were to be texting your buddies in the fourth quarter saying, you got to turn this Bama game on, they're about to go down, it would have to be because Tyler Van Dyke, who's the new quarterback up there, had the game of his life. He was so turnover prone last year and went into such a mental shell last year at Miami that it wrecked their season. And I'm asking that guy to play the game of his life against Alabama. They don't have superior athletes. They don't have an explosive playmaker at wide receiver. So it is so disproportionately on him that I think even in an effort to do that, they're so likely to turn the ball over and tilt the game in Bama's favor that I think Bama wins and pulls away.
How concerned are you, by the way, Josh Pate, with Oregon right now? I know they're 2-0, but it was not pretty the first 2 weeks of the season, to say a lot.
Pretty concerned. Because they can't run the ball. And their offensive line is a work in progress because the right tackle's been out for a little while. They will get him back. Just like Bama, they will get their left tackle back. So there's that. They are relying on explosive plays right now to score. It's good when you can get them. But that kind of profile, that kind of offensive profile makes you ripe to be shut down. I mean, totally shut down when you can't sustain drives. Because you know you got Ohio State lurking on the schedule. They got to go to Oregon State this weekend. That's not some slam dunk. I mean, Boise and Idaho pushed you. So that's not a slam dunk. But as negative as that sounds, every year we find out, since we don't have a preseason in this sport, that there are some teams that aren't ready to go in week one that end up being ready to go. It's just some of them need a longer runway to get up to speed. Now, if your schedule's front-loaded, that just means you're screwed. Oregon's is not front-loaded. So they've had room here to sort of work whatever it is wrong with them out. I still think that team's got elite top-end potential, but they are not showing it right now. And they need to get it together pretty quickly because as backloaded as that schedule may be, those weeks will eventually come.
Talking about early season problems, we thought Notre Dame was off to a great start against A&M. I always thought A&M was rather overrated heading into this season, and it was a difficult spot, right? Elko being the first-year coach of that program coming over Duke. But then Notre Dame lays an egg that no one could have seen coming up against NIU. Right now I'm looking at my producer and my board op. Both are big-time Notre Dame fans. Can you say anything to them that will uplift their spirits, or is this Marcus Freeman era just over and done with?
I mean, it's a nice day outside, I guess. Is one thing I could say. It's such a problem in the post game that Marcus Freeman was able to walk to the podium and say, hey, we've been here before. That's not good. They have been here before.
Marshall, yeah.
He's a double-digit favorite. They have been here before, losing to unranked teams at home. It's always really easy to knee-jerk this stuff and to say, fire this guy, let's just clean it out. Marcus Freeman became the head coach there in 2021. Okay, once upon a time, you had to cut your teeth at multiple stops before someone ever, like the likes of Notre Dame, gave you a head coaching opportunity. These days, the Kirby Smart era, for example, guys' first jobs are major jobs. Ryan Day at Ohio State, never a head coach before that. So It falls in line with what the reality of this era is, but that doesn't mean it takes less time to learn the lessons of being a major head coach in major college football. So it could be that Marcus Freeman is learning valuable lessons here. Hey, we're watching USC right now. I think it's the story of college football so far. Lincoln Riley forever looked at defense and just kind of snickered at it. Okay, well now, multiple years into his head coaching career, at his second stop, he has all of a sudden evolved his way of thinking. And if people had fired Lincoln Riley before that, we never would have seen this. So maybe Marcus Freeman evolves his thinking. And I'm going to tell you something else to watch. He's got a quarterback commit by the name of Deuce Knight right now in the verbal commitment fold. They have got to keep that guy committed. That is a different kind of athlete than he's ever had there. And Ole Miss wants him and Auburn wants him. They got to keep that guy committed. That's the big fight behind the scenes right now, sort of off the radar, because I think his future is very much married to keeping that elite quarterback talent committed.
Wrapping up with Josh Pate, you mentioned USC. We know in week one they had the upset up against LSU to get their season going in the right direction. LSU now plays South Carolina this weekend. South Carolina coming off a huge victory up against Kentucky. How do you think that game plays out?
Brother, I'm going to this one now. This is a noon kickoff on the East Coast. Weather could be just totally disgusting in this game. If anyone, I assume most people didn't see this, but I watched so you don't have to. If anyone saw that South Carolina-Kentucky game in week one, South Carolina's pass rush just abused Kentucky. And you should not be able to do that against LSU. That's one of the best offensive lines in the country, best tackle combos in the country. So if you can't do that, then what you have to do is have your quarterback, a first-year starter in Lenore Sellers, out-execute their guy in Garrett Nussmeier. And it means one of these wide receivers has to emerge for South Carolina. Neither of these teams have run the ball well so far this year. So that just means a really high variance game. And then you mix bad weather into the equation. But I will tell you this, that's the most underrated home field environment out of all the places I've been. Williams-Brice Stadium, the most underrated Saturday environment in college football. Brian Kelly's LSU teams have not been great away from home. They have not been great, period, so far this year. They struggled with Nichols last week. So this one could go, I mean, any direction.
Two more for Josh Pate. Texas, a huge winner of week two. We know they're 2-0 to start the year. They beat the snot out of Michigan in the Big House. I know Texas now in the SEC, they play Georgia in the middle of October on October 19th. If that Texas-Georgia game was tomorrow, how does that game play on out in your opinion?
I think it'd be about a pick 'em on a neutral field. My numbers have Georgia as about a 3-point favorite against the field, but home field will mean a lot for Texas that game. I have seen Georgia up close and personal many times, Texas as well, but I went and watched him in person last week, and it was so crazy to listen to the narrative leading up to that game of Michigan. If Michigan just get a fight, if Michigan can draw this game out in the deep end and get a fight, then it's in their favor. That game was never going to be in their favor. Texas is bigger, faster, more physical, stronger. They're deeper than Michigan. So Texas went in there wanting a fight. They wanted to send that message. They got it. Now, you may want to fight with Georgia, but you're not sending a message against Georgia physically. So you'll have to out-execute them. And I know everyone already had that game circled, but you're talking about a national championship game. Like, for all we know, those are the two best teams in the country, and we just happen to be playing it in, what, October, I guess?
Yeah, staying in the SEC, by the way. Tennessee, Missouri, and then Ole Miss. Who do you think is the best out of those three teams?
Tennessee, clearly. Tennessee to me. Tennessee's a national championship contender. Tennessee's doing what USC's done. Heupel's doing what Lincoln Riley's done. Same story's happening in Knoxville and L.A. I think that's the only time we'll ever say that sentence. But the same thing's happening in that you've got career offensive guys. Those are five-star offensive coordinator type minds and play callers that have kind of been passive on defense, and they've both got really good defenses this year. I was over in Knoxville this spring and hung out the whole day with Heupel. All he wanted to talk about was defense. He was so adamant that they had made the moves and they were so underrated and overlooked defensively. And I'm like, okay, well, the football games will come this fall, so we'll see. Well, we've seen so far. And see, in the past, they have not had a shot against Georgia. They've needed to score 50 to beat Alabama. That's not that kind of profile team this year. And as a result, I think they're a contender in some conversations that even like 20-year-old people have never had Tennessee be a participant in.
Last thing I'll ask you, Josh Pate, we're on in Boise State right now as one of our great affiliates on KTIK. When you look at the G5 spot for the college football playoff this year, the conference champ, who's the team that's going to get there in your opinion?
I picked Memphis, and Memphis is at Florida State Saturday. They're about a touchdown underdog. That's their shot. However, they should be able to lose that game and still be a contender, just like Boise. I mean, they go to Autzen and lose on a walk-off field goal. That should bolster their resume. What I don't like is a team like Liberty not playing a single Power 4 opponent. And you know as well as I do, we'll get to the end of the year and someone will believe the biggest lie in college football, which is you are what your record says you are. And they'll want Liberty in there. No, you ought to get credit for scheduling these big teams and then hanging with them when you go play them.
Josh, much respect to you. Really do appreciate all the work that you do for CBS Sports and the podcast. Everything's great. So we appreciate you jumping on board with us today.
I appreciate it, man.
There you go. Josh Pate right there. Some really strong takes. I love the theory about Coach Prime leaving Colorado, Gus Malzahn then leaving UCF, going back to the SEC, taking the Arkansas job. And then if Coach Prime wants to coach next season, him going and taking over UCF. I thought that was a crazy but wild and fascinating theory. And love what he said about Nebraska. And hey, also, I had Tennessee as my fourth-ranked team in Take 5 Wednesday. I did Georgia 1, Texas 2, Ohio State 3, Tennessee 4, Alabama 5. So to hear him say they're a national championship contender, we're in line on that one. All righty. How about that? I'm running like 1,000 miles per hour during the break. Got to do sports minutes. Got to do advertisements as well. Even when we go to commercial break, your boy doesn't stop working. I forgot that we only had a four-minute break there because we had a live read. So Stuart Kovacs, who usually is not in a frantic mood, he's very smooth Stu. Stu comes by and he's like, yeah, you got to get back on the air. And then Pat Boyle gave me the, calm down, everything's all right, we're good. We didn't play the liner yet. How long was that music going, by the way? Not that long?
Maybe about 15 seconds.
Yeah, usually my internal play clock is better than that, but, you know, I forgot that it was a 4 minute break instead of a 5 minute break. Anyway, Pat Sertan, I need some oxygen. I can't believe I'm making a Linval Joseph reference for the second time this week. We talked about him that one time returning a fumble up against Philadelphia with the Vikings, and he had these sunglasses on the sideline with the oxygen hooked up to him. I may need some oxygen after quickly running a 40-yard dash, sprinting, moving real quickly to get back to the studio. But here is Pat Sertan the second. He was on Why is Draymond Green Talking About Football? Wait, that's the name of the podcast? I watched this. I didn't pick up on the name of the podcast. Why is Draymond Green Talking About Football with Jordan Schultz is the name of the podcast?
That's the name of the podcast, yep.
That's brilliant. Boy, you don't like that? What are you shaking your head about all mad? I know no. I know that you're mad because Notre Dame sucks, but what are you all freaking out about?
I mean,
about?
It's a pretty appropriate title. Why the hell is Draymond Green talking about football?
I can't have an opinion?
No, I don't want to hear his opinion on football.
Why not?
He plays basketball.
So?
I'll listen, and I don't listen to his basketball podcast, but if I wanted to listen to his podcast, I'd listen to the one where he's talking about basketball, a sport that he plays, a sport that he's a multi-time champion in. I don't want to hear him talk about college football. I don't care. He has just as much college football knowledge as I do.
No, he went to Michigan State, so.
All right, cool. And I have Tom Izzo from Digital who works down the hall. Does that mean that I'm an expert?
Well, I'm just saying, I'm sure Draymond Green wasn't picking Notre Dame to go to the semifinal like you were. That's all I'm going to say right there. I would actually put the knowledge of Draymond Green without ever hearing him talk about football up there with the knowledge of Pat Boyle.
Really?
When it comes to talking about football.
Get Draymond Green on the show. I'll school his ass.
He would probably just kick you in the cojones and then down goes Boyle. Anyway, here is Pat Sertan II on why is Draymond Green talking about football with Jordan Schultz. I wonder how they put Draymond Green and Jordan Schultz together for this podcast, but here's Pat Sertan ranking his top five wide receivers.
I have to say Tyreek Hill. He's definitely up there. Tyreek probably number one in my book. Then you got to go Justin Jefferson. I mean, those guys like 1A, 1B. I mean, you can never go wrong with any of them at number one. CeeDee Lamb, definitely. He just had a great year. I'll put him up there. Ja'Marr Chase, definitely. I like Ja'Marr's game, too. But that last spot, it's tough, bro. I ain't going to lie. I might going off of last year, I might have to say Amon Ra, just because, you know, the numbers he put up was pretty high for sure.
So I'll just ask this question. Who are the top five receivers in the NFL? I noticed he didn't mention A.J. Brown, who's been a very good wide receiver. That was one just like notable omission. Also, another noticeable omission. Does anyone ever say Cooper Kupp? I know he's been banged up the last few years, but that was a dude that has won a Super Bowl MVP. He's a phenomenal wide receiver. And like no one ever mentions Cooper Kupp for crying out loud. So I was a little bit surprised by that, but maybe I shouldn't be. So I'll give you my top five, but let's go around the room here first. Stu, your top five receivers in the NFL are who?
Okay, if I'm going...
Go from five to one. Make it entertaining.
Okay.
Or should is one to five more
I think one to five is more interesting because I think a lot of people will have the same two guys near the top or at the top. Yeah.
I'm actually glad Samter isn't here today because this was in our Slack. Stu, myself, and Samter are in a show Slack. Samter's out for the rest of the week. And he's chiming in when I put this topic out there in the Slack. And you know what? It was a really lame opinion by Samter. Because we want people to give an opinion. We don't want people to just sit there and go, oh, it could be this guy, it could be that guy. But Samter said, number one feels impossible to me. How can you choose between Justin Jefferson and Tyreek? Sertan was smart to put them 1A and 1B. Mike, you're a longtime radio producer. It's either all or nothing in radio. It's either this guy's great or this guy stinks. I don't want someone basically to have like a non-opinion. Oh, I'm going to give the edge to this guy, but I'm not going to put the other guy too. It's not that tough. One, two, three, four, five. Give the list. So, Stu, you know what? One, two, three, four, five. Give the list.
No, I think all five guys are equal here. So,
okay. Yeah. So no. You're going to do a 1, a 1, a 1A, a 1B, 1 C, 1 D. Okay. Yeah, let me tell you, you are really fun. I want to hang out with you and go to a party with you. We will have an electric conversation.
Speaking of which, really quickly, they had Joe Klatt on FS1. He ranked his top college football teams. He had Georgia, Texas, and Ohio State 1A, 1B, 1C.
Oh. No!
What are we doing?
Wait. He had Georgia, Texas, and Ohio State.
1A, 1B, or 1, 1A, 1B.
So I just ranked my top five teams in college football. Georgia, 1. Texas, 2. Ohio State, 3. Tennessee, 4. Alabama, 5. Come on, Klatt. What are we doing? Just holding a candle for the Big Ten? Like, Ohio State deserved to be ranked 3. Texas deserved to be ranked 2. Texas just beat Michigan. Ohio State can't beat Michigan. And then Georgia's the best team in college football. Why is this so difficult? Stop with this nonsense.
Joe Klatt.
I like Klatt with Gus Johnson. That's a great broadcasting team. But give an opinion. You're paid to give an opinion. It's not life or death, these rankings. All righty, Stu, give me your top five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
All right, number one's Tyreek Hill. I think he's the best game breaker, game changer, best shot at 2,000 yards. I think he's number one. I'll go Justin Jefferson at 2. Obviously, health is key. Needs a quarterback, but 4 straight 1,000-yard seasons. He's pretty incredible. This is where it gets interesting. I'll go Ja'Marr Chase, 3.
There was another name, by the way, that Sertan didn't say. Another name that I was very surprised.
Yeah.
Are we in line to that same name? It's your guy.
So I don't have him 4. I have CeeDee Lamb 4, but I have Davante Adams 5.
Okay, so your 5, it's, well, your 1 is Hill.
Yes.
Your 1A is him? I'm kidding. Who's your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 again? Go ahead.
Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, CeeDee Lamb, Davante Adams.
Okay. Pat, who's your 5?
I'm going to go 5-1 because I think 1 might be a little surprising, although I'm a little pissed you mentioned it before because I think he is largely underrated. So number 5 for me, Amon-Ra St. Brown. Last year, 1,500 yards, 10 touchdowns, only 3 drops. The guy doesn't have, he doesn't have cheetah speed, but his route running immaculate, his catching in traffic immaculate. He's 5 for me. CeeDee Lamb, number 4. I mean, the guy in the last 2 years has now just put up stupid numbers, 3,000 yards, 21 touchdowns. Still drops a couple of passes, 5 each of the last 2 seasons, but CeeDee, what he's done, that stretch he went on last year with Dallas, nearly untouchable.
He's also the first player you think of on the Cowboys offense.
Oh,
I know we talk about Dak more, but I think of CeeDee Lamb in terms of who I'm intimidated by more if I was a defensive player rather than Dak Prescott.
If we were just ranking the fastest receivers in football, Tyreek Hill would be number one. But pound for pound, best receivers for me is number three.
Wow.
Yeah, because you know how many drops Tyreek Hill has in the last three seasons? 28. He had 12 drops last year.
Yeah, overcomes.
You can't tell me he's the best receiver in football if you're dropping the ball double-digit times per year.
You seem angry today. You know, I'm a loud guy, and sometimes people accuse me of yelling when I'm not yelling. You're like, ever since I brought up Notre Dame, you have just been yelling about everything.
Yeah, because I had stuffed it deep down, you know, behind about a dozen blue moons over the weekend, and
do
now it's coming back up.
Just have a moment of zen, you know? Calm down a little bit. Lower the voice a little bit, all right? Just tone it down a little bit, Pat. It's all right. All right, so we give me your list here. Just give me your top five players. You're coming off very angry right now. It's hurting my feelings.
You're like Librarian Gelb right now.
Just calm down. What? Do a little whisper for me. All right, a little whisper.
All right.
Inner number five. Who's five?
So five, Amon Ross St. Brown. No, four, CeeDee Lamb.
Tone it down.
Three, Tyreek Hill. Two, Justin Jefferson.
He just went back up.
Two, Justin Jefferson. 2,800 yards. And again, only playing 27 games in the last two seasons. But, I mean, he makes the greatest highlight reel catches every year.
Mm-hmm.
He is the best red zone threat in football. One-on-one, double-teamed, yards after the catch. It doesn't matter. Justin Jefferson, for me, and the guy's only got seven drops combined in the last 2 years. Like I said, Tyreek Hill had 12 mm-hmm. last year. But for me, we're ranking number one receiver. We're ranking receivers right now. Cooper Kupp just put everybody on notice
wow.
that he's about to retake his throne. A guy that nearly won the MVP.
Triple crown.
In 2021, won the triple crown, just shy of breaking the single season mark for receiving yards in a year, had almost 2,000 yards and 16 touchdowns. He's been banged up the last 2 years. What he did on Sunday night, especially after Puka Nacua got hurt, 14 for a buck, 10 and a touchdown. If Cooper Kupp stays healthy this year, he might match his 2021 season. He's going to be that freaking good. Cooper Kupp, number one.
Marco, are you sensing just a very angry Pat Boyle? Because I get told a lot of times, oh, you're yelling, and I'm like, oh, I'm not yelling. Pat seems very angry today, just in his tone.
I think Pat's usually angry, so I think that's probably a decent guess.
Because you're a good barometer for that. Like, you're usually a loud guy, too.
I'm very loud,
yeah,
yes.
We're New Yorkers. We're loud guys. All right, here's my top five wide receivers. I'm putting Cooper Kupp in at five. He needs to be on more of these lists. I'm not going number one, but I respect that you did that, Pat. But I put Cooper Kupp at five. CeeDee Lamb is in at number four. I put Davante Adams in at number three. His first season with Aaron Rodgers, a first-team All-Pro. And last year, he still had a good season with no one at quarterback. In at two, he's my favorite wide receiver in the NFL, but I can't say he's the best right now. You know, you could say it's 1-1A, but I'm not going to do that. It's Justin Jefferson in at two, and the number one, it's Tyreek Hill. Here's who I felt bad about leaving off the list. And it just shows you how great of a spot we're in for wide receivers. I felt bad about leaving St. Brown off the list. I felt bad about leaving A.J. Brown off the list, and also Ja'Marr Chase. But I put, Ja'Marr Chase just got locked down by Christian Gonzalez this past weekend, which he was my pick to win Defensive Rookie of the Year last year, Christian Gonzalez, and then he got hurt. But that shouldn't be happening, and I wonder how much the contract's going to factor into this season. So right now, Cooper Kupp 5, CeeDee Lamb 4, Davante Adams 3, Justin Jefferson 2, and Tyreek Hill in at number 1. Alrighty, Ryan Hickey will join us for his weekly chat in studio during the football season next. I still don't know how we got him exclusively on this show in season. That is some of the greatest guest booking of all time. Right, you're in proud of the big names that we get, Marco. No name bigger than Ryan Hickey.
None.
That's how Marco. Let me translate what that answer means by Marco. He goes, I'm not going to say something that I want to say. Let's just get to the update because it won't be nice to anybody else, right?
That's not true.
Oh, okay.
I'm a big fan of Hickey. That's not true. I'm a big fan of Hickey. Honestly, I really am.
Now you're talking really soft. I think I like just made us all tone it down a little bit in the studio.
I mean, apparently that's what you want. You want soft, calm tones in this dark lit room. So that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Let's keep it nice and calm.
Nothing like lights down. You got one, two, three, four guys in the room. You know, maybe we get a candle lit.
All right, now you're going
to
places.
Little popcorn or something like that. Watch a movie. Where are you
going?
I'm not talking about a dirty mind that you are.
I don't know where you're
headed. Welcome back to the Infinity Sports Network.
You know, this is an appropriate song, Pat Boyle. Good job bringing us back to this, because we'll probably fight and party right now with Hot Take Hickey, who joins us. Let me introduce you properly. He is the host of Hick at Night, which you can hear on the Infinity Sports Network. That is Sundays from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern time. And then you could also listen to Hot Take Hickey throughout the week, Monday through Friday, as he's the executive producer, the EP, as they say in the industry, for the JR Sport Brief extravaganza. Hickey's coming off the bench, right? This week, you're hosting on Thursday, tomorrow?
That is right. That is right. So a little double dip. How about that?
All righty. Let me get your thoughts on this. First off, we bash you enough in this segment, so I'll give you credit. Even though I said Texas was going to win the game, I thought it was going to be closer than what you thought. You finally had a right prediction about Michigan after just picking against them for an entire year. But you said Michigan was going to get annihilated, and they did so up against Texas.
Hot take, Hickey.
So you can take your victory lap here if you would like.
And, I mean, there's not much to say. You saw it on Saturday. For me, the confusion is twofold. Number one, why people bought into this team. But just because of the amount of people that, like...
Because you got to pick 12 teams. Like, that's a problem going to 12 teams. There's a lot of teams that aren't great that people are going to go make a case for to get into the college football playoff.
Well, even just like Michigan being, I think it was 8 in the country in the preseason poll. Like, you look at what they were losing. Like, you just lose any team outside of, I would argue, probably Georgia, Ohio State, probably Alabama. Any other team in the country loses the amount of talent and coaching that Michigan lost, no one's believing in them. So I was surprised still that there was a belief that they would just keep on churning it away. But two, also, what is Shrum Moore doing at quarterback?
Like, where doesn't have one. Where they need to go into the transfer portal.
What was he looking at this offseason where he thought either Davis Warren and or Alex Orji were going to be good enough? Like, that's, you talk about a gross miscalculation. They can't even complete a forward pass.
Kyle McCord would look pretty damn good in a Michigan uniform.
And
right
you
now.
Would look pretty good at this point, honestly.
I don't know about that.
Jeez.
That'd be a little bit too hefty for the Michigan quarterback room. But at least they could take the hits probably right now.
That's also true.
Okay. One team in college football that's impressed you the most and one team that you're most disappointed with. I will start. The team I'm impressed by the most is Tennessee. Josh Heupel, I've always been a fan of his. We saw what he did 2 years ago. Nico Yamaliava is going to be a star. Did I not say that correctly?
I just like how you said it so fast just to push through and move on.
I think I'm pretty close, and then I saw him pronounce his own name and say his own name, and he said it, and then the way that he tried to spell it out for people and like kind of just like say it for people, it just sounded differently than how he originally said it. So I think it's Yamaliava. You know?
Wait, are you putting an L at front? I think it's an I.
Yamaliava.
Nico now you're messing me up. Yeah. Nico Iamalieva.
I don't know if that's right. I don't know who's right. But either way, we could agree the guy's a really good
quarterback. We know who we're talking about. He is very good.
Tua Tagovailoa is easier. Haliputivati Vaitai, or whatever the guy's name was, the left tackle. Giannis Antetokounmpo, much easier than however you say. You know what? People that know Nico well, just call him Nico I, right? Like to a T, in the words of the great Mike
Kristaps Porzingis.
He puts out performances like this, people will know his name in 2 weeks.
Mark Manning.
Okay, so one team I'm impressed by the most, or the team I'm impressed by the most, is Tennessee. I think right now, I did my Take 5 Wednesday earlier. I had Georgia 1, Texas 2, Ohio State 3, Tennessee 4, Alabama 5. I think Tennessee right now is the fourth best team in college football.
They've looked very good. Now,
Josh Pate, by the way, said national championship contender.
Wow. Now, they got a tough schedule coming up, so I will reserve praise for Tennessee until they
Penn State,
roll
though,
into...
Hickey would just say, national championship, no big deal.
I'm just saying they do have a tough schedule. Mm-hmm. So, NC State, look, it's a good win. And you only can play so far who's on your schedule, They breeze by both teams. They look good so far. Team I'm most impressed with, USC. Their defense is finally, for the first time, tough. And even last week, look, it's Utah State. I'm not going to sit here and go crazy. But they shut out Utah State. Why is that important? Go back to last year when I picked USC to win the national title and was embarrassed.
What'd you pick them this
year? First game of the year.
Just wondering.
Oh, my goodness.
How'd you pick them for this year? Just wondering.
USC? I said like 8-4. I didn't really.
Oh, so you didn't have them in the college football playoff?
No. They, to me,
folks,
were the biggest
USC's
enigma.
USC's going to the college football playoff. That's the hickey factor.
I had, you know me, I'm usually very confident in where I stand.
Even when
I
you're wrong, you're stubborn the next year.
Right. So, some will say stubborn. I had no feel of USC going into the season whatsoever. And I've been impressed because the defense is real. Shout out Utah State last year. Why I brought that up. They gave up 28 points to San Jose State. They couldn't stop anybody. So now they're actually not only stopping LSU, but stopping teams they should. That defense seems real under Danton Lane. I've been very impressed so far through 2 weeks.
Okay. One team you're most disappointed by. Wait. Why did you just throw out with, you just said Dan Lanning at the end of that answer?
No, Dan Lynn.
Oh, I thought you said Dan Lanning.
Lynn.
I was like, because you were speaking very fast there, and I heard you say, I thought you said Dan Lanning. I go, is he talking about Oregon maybe being the most disappointed team? And he knew the question was coming, so he just got ahead of it. But the team that you're most disappointed by, for me, it's Notre Dame. Now, I always thought going into this year, Notre Dame wasn't as good as what people are talking about, but they are the team that should get in the college football playoff, right? And they'd be one of those teams that, because you expanded to 12, that's why they'll get in, just like how Penn State's going to get in because it's a 12-team format and a few other schools as well. But the question is, are they really great? Or is it just because they expanded the format to 12 where good looks like great because of what the standard is now? Notre Dame goes from the ultimate high in week one, beating A&M, which it was a good victory. I even said last week it speaks more to how A&M isn't as good as what some people had them ranked going into the year. And Notre Dame did what they needed to do, and that was just secure a victory, even though I wasn't that impressed by Notre Dame in the game. But it was a good victory. To then not even show up against NIU, and you just thought you could get off, you know, get out of your dorm room and go to Touchdown Jesus in South Bend and win that game, that's embarrassing. So Notre Dame's the team I'm most disappointed by because that I like Hammack, the coach, and I appreciate him coming on, but losing to NIU is just unacceptable.
You're right, and probably will cost them a college football playoff berth, so they really just screw the pooch here big time. I'm going to go with Oregon. Pick them to win the national title.
Oh, Dan Lanning.
And they have looked terrible so far through 2 weeks. You ready for this stat? Their offensive line, through two games this year, has already given up more sacks than they did all of last year. They are terrible. They've been awful on the offensive line. They can't stop anybody. Ashton Jeanty, you knew after week one when he ran for 267 and six touchdowns, what are they going to do in week two? Probably ride the hot hand. They can't pass the ball to Boise State whatsoever. And you would think Oregon, okay, let's game plan to stop the run. What does Jeanty do? 192, three touchdowns. Defense is not very good. Offense is not very good. The trenches, where I thought that Oregon was going to be very tough this year, so far it's been very weak. And when you start out slow like that, that's a position where it's tough to get better in season. I am panicked so far after 2 weeks of what I've seen with the Ducks.
Okay, let's get to the NFL. You have always been a critic of Aaron Rodgers. You do not want to see the Jets do well. I even see the bleep-eating grin that was just happening in front of me when I mentioned the Jets. You had to love what you saw on Monday.
I would say that's what we expect. Like that shouldn't be a shock to anybody. Guy at 41 years old, coming off the most serious injury anyone could suffer, looking rusty, also playing with an offense that is basically brand new to everybody. All five offensive linemen on the Jets, for the most part, are either new or coming off injury, so they're all trying to work together. They got a bad matchup playing against one of the best defensive lines in the NFL.
I actually thought the offense was fine. They didn't have the ball for that long. Breece Hall had a horrible game.
He did.
You saw what Rodgers does before the ball is snapped, which is like the greatest thing a Jet fan has seen because of who their quarterbacks have been. You saw some of the connection with Garrett Wilson. You know Lazard is going to have a solid season for them just because of the chemistry he has with Rodgers. I wasn't critical of the Jets' offense. It was the defense. You want to tell me this is a great defense and every Jet fan and player will make it out like they have the greatest defense of all time? You got a gift, no McCaffrey, and you let the backup for San Francisco run for 150 yards. That Jets defense, I'm not calling them great. I'm not saying they're as bad as and play as poorly the rest of the year as they showed on Monday, but they're just a good defense now, and I can't call them great until I see otherwise.
That was embarrassing. Robert Saleh said after the game that he's not worried about the defense, that they'll fix it. You better. I mean, if they don't make the playoffs, he's getting fired anyway, but especially if that defense is the reason why they don't make the playoffs. Whew.
I used to hate the Colts, and you know that, because of Brady and Manning and that whole rivalry, mm-hmm. and Jim Irsay and all the crying that the Colts organization usually does.
Oh, crying.
And all that. I don't dislike the Colts anymore.
Okay.
Like
welcome.
Where your organization is, where my organization is, I don't consider us rivals anymore.
Yeah. Which is neutral now.
Which is sad. So I will pull for your Colts to make the playoffs this year.
Wow.
I don't think they are, but I would like to see Anthony Richardson be a success. With that being said,
I knew there's a butt coming.
No, it has nothing to. And I'm not saying anything negative, but like when Josh McDaniels was considered for the Colts job, I told you the reason why he didn't take it, and he had the job, and then said, "No, I'm not going to take it."
Well documented.
You thank him for that.
Well documented.
It's because
yes.
I don't think he got the blessing of Bill because of how much Bill hates the Colts and that matters to him. So seeing Belichick ever coach on the Colts like 4 years ago, that would have pained me. Bill coaching the Jets next year is never something I thought I could envision, especially with BB resigns as the HC of the NYJ. But if this season, and I think the Jets will make the playoffs, but if this season goes south for the Jets, and let's say Rodgers is still back next year, Salah's gone. And do you think Belichick, is there a chance Belichick out of 100? What's the number, coach of the Jets?
One out of 100. I think there's a far greater likelihood, that's most of it, mm-hmm. that he's coaching the Bills next year.
Ooh. In division, I don't think they're moving on from McDermott, but.
If they do.
And then finally, you predicted the Falcons to go 14-3 this year?
I did. I did.
They're 0-1.
They're
0-1. Lost to the Steelers.
0-1.
They play the Eagles on Monday, a game I'm 0-2. Going to. And then they play Kansas City.
0-3.
Tampa winning the division now?
I'm not jumping. Let me see how these next 2 weeks
play out. Michael Penix Jr., here he comes to save
the
day.
They are probably going 0-3. Before, I'm not jumping off the Falcons bandwagon after one game.
But you got 1 foot in the water.
That was the most disappointing performance of from week one. That was terrible.
All righty. He is the host of Hick at Night. Heard Sundays on the Infinity Sports Network from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern Time. The listeners in the YouTube chat want us to put you in a straitjacket for these segments because they say you talk with your hands a lot and you're going all over the place and it's very distracting.
All right, fine. I'll put my hands in my
behind
pockets.
The back.
All right.
I don't know if I had enough hot takes like Higgy or something. I don't know about that.
Who said that?
Oh, that was Bobby Hebert. Former Saint.
Everyone's taking shots at me.
Yeah, no, he used to listen to us in WWL.
Jeez.
Yeah, no, a lot of people. It's funny, whenever I bring in a guest, they're like, oh, whatever happened to the hot take kicky guy? I'm like, he's still here.
Still alive. Still thriving.
All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network.